Hello, hello, and welcome back to yet another episode of Power Up and Game. This is episode number 17, and I am joined once again with my man, Taylor. Taylor, how you doing today?
I tell you what, Michael, I don't want to say there's an off season for gaming news, but it feels like we're dab in the middle of an off season for gaming news. It is, it's rough out there when you're trying to do a podcast about big time gaming news.
Yeah, well, all the big hitters, they're in a season to where we get the small little drip drops of news because they're all waiting for the next financial quarter so they can announce all their big stuff and start releasing a whole lot of stuff. But the summer's when everything is released, and it's around the end of the holidays is when we get our big drops. You know, you get your Call of Duties and you got your God of War. And right now, we're kind of in that it's con season. So everybody's like slowly dripping everything in. We got GamesCon coming up. And then, of course, later on throughout the year, everybody's doing their own little showcases, which I think is a reason a whole lot of stuff has slowed down because we've heard everything we needed to hear earlier this year.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, though. There's still some interesting stories we got this week. But we've had episodes where we're over here like, fuck yeah, this is a huge story. This is a huge story. I can't wait to talk about this. And then I'm looking at our docket for this week, and it's a bunch of like, oh, that's really cool. Yeah, that's really cool. I don't know how much I'm going to have to say about that. And then we get to our main topics, and I'm pumped for those two. These are going to be, it's going to be a fun episode regardless.
Yeah, we got some main topics here that one of them I don't think anybody ever saw coming, but hey. While we're on that topic, here's what we have on our docket for today. Xbox consoles are getting Discord voice chat. Doom co-creator John Romero is making a new first-person shooter. Former Naughty Dog dev Bruce Straley is making his own studio called Wildfly Interactive. And we have not one, but two main topics this week. For starters, we haven't heard much about Marvel Spider-Man 2 in quite some time. So, piggybacking off an article from Game Rant stating why Insomniac should make suits more important to the story, we're going to share our thoughts on what we think Marvel Spider-Man can do to improve on his predecessor. And we'll close out our show with a relatively fun topic. We'll be putting a little sports talk into Power Up and Game as we share our reactions to the latest Madden ratings. But really, this is just an excuse for us to talk about the franchise and whether or not we think it's on the right track. So let's get right into it with our stories of the week. Xbox consoles are getting Discord voice chat. Discord recently announced that Xbox consoles are getting Discord voice chat support. Although Discord isn't fully integrated yet, Xbox insiders will be able to test out this feature starting today, or at least at the recording of this podcast. In the press release, Discord also explained how users will set up and link their Discord to their Xbox accounts. We'll leave a link to that press release in the description of this episode. So, Taylor, what are your thoughts on Discord finally coming to Xbox?
First starters, I don't think we're the right podcast to be talking about Discord right now. We are using Discord to record this podcast. It's helping us out. We appreciate Discord for that. That said, we've been having some issues with Discord over the past few weeks. So it's a little hard not to be judgmental right now, but I don't know. I think this is a pretty cool story. It's already integrated, I believe, with PlayStation. So it coming to Xbox seems like the next logical step. It's really cool with, you think about crossplay years ago, right? It was this thing that not everybody did. It was a thing that PlayStation, I believe, they were the last big company to want to do. And Xbox and Nintendo were like, yeah, let's do crossplay, and PlayStation eventually decided to join them, and it's kind of been a great process ever since, to where we have a lot of these games having crossplay support, and this is just another add-on to that, I guess.
Yeah, I think everybody's just so used to Discord now that it's become second nature for a lot of players, because you know there used to be a bunch of different sites and apps that try to do game chat by getting everybody together, like no matter what console you're on, no matter if you're a mobile, PC, or whatever, you can chat with friends and text with friends all in one place. But Discord is the one that kind of got it right. It really built up a community. And yeah, like you said, we're not the best to talk about this because we have had our issues with Discord, but we still use it. It's easy. It's the simplest way for us to connect with everybody, whether we're in the same state or in the same country or in a different part of the world. But everybody knows that I'm not the biggest fan of Discord. I've made my dismay for Discord known. I'm pretty sure on this show, but also on Twitter. But hey, it's something that I still use because, hey, despite its fault, it is still the best gaming community, third-party chat social application you can get right now. Somebody actually showed a really interesting tweet that Discord and Xbox actually came into partnership back in 2016. So this integration has been in the process for a few years now. What do you think took so long for it to actually like reach the point to where it became part of Xbox?
Well, there was that story a few years ago to where Microsoft was attempting to purchase Discord, or was in talks or something like that, if you remember. And I believe PlayStation ended up entering that partnership instead. So, I don't know. Who knows what happens behind these doors with business meetings and all that stuff. So, I have no idea what could have took so long for Discord to make its way to Xbox. But I'm just more so glad that it's on the platform. Same thing with PlayStation. So, like I said, it's just that next evolution in crossplay. To where, like, you look back at the last generation around this time, or even like the 360 days, could you imagine playing with people on PC or PlayStation on your Xbox 360?
No, that was more like a pipe dream at that point.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So you look at it 2022 and we're adding Discord and we have crossplay. It's just really fucking cool, man. Like, there's a lot of honestly crappy stories we talk about sometimes in gaming news, and I feel like this week in particular, I'm kind of glad that we have a bunch of pretty cool stories, including this one.
Yeah, I also think that it's actually pretty cool. Yeah, you're right. Back in like the 360 days, that was like a dream everybody had. Like, oh man, can you imagine playing like, I don't know, Halo with your friend who has a PC, or playing like Killzone with your friends, one on PlayStation, one on PC. Like it was an idea that people thought would be kind of cool, especially since LAN parties were kind of fading away at that point.
Yeah, the online multiplayer, that's when it started to really excel with Call of Duty 4, Gears of War. I wouldn't name a PlayStation one, but honestly, Killzone is the big PlayStation game that was multiplayer at the time. So.
Oh, yeah, they also had that...
they thrived with single-player games. All right, they really thrived with those story games, which they still do today.
Oh, yeah. But what was that one big multiplayer they had that was actually pretty... Was it Hawk something? I forgot what it was called. Hawkeye?
No, I doubt it was Hawkeye.
No, not like the Marvel character Hawkeye. Man, you know what? Now I'm going to look it up. But PlayStation 3, I believe it was on, had like this massive multiplayer. Was it Starhawk?
I don't know why that sounds more right. But while you look that up, to tie this all back, again, like I was saying, it's one of those things that where I think I'm kind of just reflecting back at that time, and then reflecting back at the time of the Xbox One, PS4 generation, to where everybody was still like, no, we're not working with PlayStation, we're not working with Xbox. And then you look at it right now in 2022, where crossplay is becoming so much more normal. And again, Discord is just that next evolution of it, to where it does not matter what platform you're on, you can talk with people.
I guess it was Starhawk. I'm going to find it and remember it after we're done recording. I'm like, oh, gosh, darn it. I'm going to have to edit it.
You're going to record a new episode just being like, I know what it was.
But yeah, you don't have to worry about like texting your friends and doing like a voice chat on your phone anymore. So like, that's pretty cool.
Either that or I don't know if you know, you remember like the voice chat stuff with Discord. And it's just... It's so easy now, and then I'm thinking back again to those old days, to where we had, before Xbox parties and stuff, I remember having, you can only either talk in game chat, or you can talk one-on-one in a private chat.
Yeah.
It's just like, fuck, man, we have come such a far way.
Yeah, especially since people got over that by using like a Messenger, like Yahoo Messenger, and like other third party stuff that had like not party chats, but like it was like you and your friends can all create clubs and hang out together. And eventually Xbox and PlayStation tried to do the whole meta club thing, but I don't really think that went anywhere. We spent like at least two generations and years trying to get here to where everybody can just chat in one place no matter what platform you're on. And it's kind of ridiculous now that you, like, when you think about it now, it's kind of weird how long it took for us all to get to like this point.
And how just easily, just like, oh, that's just the way gaming is now.
Yeah.
It's like, what do you mean? Cause... Discord should have been on here. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's fucking nuts. And by the way, we didn't really talk about this, but it does seem like I'm not an Xbox insider, so I'm going to have to wait till the integration actually finds its way to Xbox for all users. But it seems like integration is going to be pretty simple, so that's pretty cool too. Because that's the worst thing you could do if you're trying to put a new app on a console or a platform, is make it fucking complicated for everybody to sign up for it.
Yeah, the problem is lately Xbox hasn't made things truly easy, so the integration, I guess that's why it took so long, isn't really something I'm looking forward to. Because don't forget, back in the day, but back in the the Xbox One's mid to late years, Xbox made streaming to Mixer and Twitch really easy. But now they made it a chore at the end of when they try to get rid of Twitch and really try to focus on Mixer before they drop Mixer. And I've noticed now, streaming on the Xbox Series X is a chore. Like, even though they have the new controls with the share button, you know there's no way for you to map Twitch to just that button.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's really weird that they still won't let you to just press a button and be like, okay, you're now streaming on Twitch. Like, PlayStation has a share button. You press it once, or a long hold, a double tap. Okay, you're now streaming. Xbox is like, oh, you have to press the home button. You have to navigate to the share section of your home button. And then you have to go all the way down to live stream settings and then streams. Like, geez, man, why can't I just press a button? But yeah, so I'm not really sure about the Discord integration. Xbox hasn't really been doing a great job with integrating other.
Michael's like, I don't trust what they said in the press release. We'll see how easy it actually is when I get my hands on it.
Yeah, like they haven't really done a great job with getting those integrations to work natively, organically into the Xbox ecosystem. If it's not their system, they don't really seem to make it easy for their users, and that's strange to me. All right, moving on. There's no bridge for this one. I'm just going to go straight into it. Doom's co-creator, John Romero, is making a new first-person game. Romero Games has announced that they are working on a brand new FPS game. And here's what they had to say on Twitter. Quote, Romero Games is hiring for an all-new FPS. Join the team is a new dawn for Romero Games. We're working with a major publisher to develop John Romero's next shooter, an all-new FPS with an original new IP. Our team is expanding and we're looking for talented people for all positions and at all experience levels, particularly those with Unreal Engine 5 experience. Visit RomeroGames.com for listings. End quote. All right, so this isn't a master story right now, only because they're obviously like at the very beginning of getting things started and rolling with this game. And after all, we don't have any details on what the game will look like, other than that it'll involve the Unreal Engine 5, which is still pretty fresh and new. But still, John Romero's resume is filled with excellent games such as Doom and Quake. So we thought it would definitely be worthy of our your time and mentioning. So, Taylor, any quick thoughts on this one?
I'm pumped for this. There's something over the past few years especially. I don't know if this is because I haven't been paying attention to it, or just now I'm starting to realize it, but it seems like a lot of like very well, I don't really want to say well-known, but more so just like very talented people in the gaming industry who've worked on awesome games are starting to be like, you know what, I'm just going to leave for some reason or another. I'm going to do my own thing. and I'm going to create my own studio. And we've been seeing this a lot the past few years, and it's really cool to see all these great creators kind of bolster themselves and be like, we're going to create our own studio and make our own games, because I think that's only going to make the gaming industry better, because you know, you're creating more opportunities for people to make these awesome games. But yeah, there's not much really to talk about, though. John Romero does have a great track record, like you said. The main thing here is seeing Unreal Engine 5 is just, it's another thing to what we had an episode all about, Unreal Engine 5, like, is it the future? And we kind of were both pretty optimistic about it. This is just going to be one of those things that we think can be one of the best engines in gaming, if not the best engine in gaming. It's still early on in its lifespan, I guess, but, and just again, seeing Romero's name attached to another first person shooter, I'm very excited to see what that could be.
Ah, so you're ready for Romero to make you his bitch?
I don't get the reference.
Oh, really? Okay, no, a long time ago, John Romero had a game called Daikatana, and during advertisement, one of the taglines was, John Romero is about to make you his bitch. It was just some advertising nonsense.
What's the game?
Daikatana. It was like this time where first person shooters were like super edgy.
Yeah.
And like it was one of those things that John Romero to this day was like, yo, that whole tagline was just super unfortunate. And yeah, the guy is just like, I don't even think that was his idea. I'm not sure where that came from. But like, yeah, the game didn't do well. And that's what made it so infamous, is that everybody remembers that game only because of that tagline for an advertisement of John Romero is going to make you his bitch. It's like, geez.
It's a bit aggressive there.
It is. But yeah, John Romero has made it known that he didn't really care for that tagline. And he's like, yeah, I'm sorry. That's just unfortunate. I don't know much about John Romero personally. He seems like a cool guy. I'm glad to see that he's still working in video games, because honestly, I forgot all about John Romero.
Yeah, because in this industry especially, there's a lot of developers, regardless of their resume, who just suffer from either burnout or just like, you know, I'm through with the bullshit where they are and stuff like that. Yeah. It's not all just like, oh, well, you made this great game and we're thrilled all the time.
And it is always heartbreaking to hear about developers who got out of the industry due to a bad experience. We've heard
and
those stories all
the
time.
That kind of transition us to the next story.
Ah, yes. And I'm sure you're talking about former Naughty Dog dev Bruce Straley.
That
is
exactly.
A new studio. Man, it is always great to see Naughty Dog devs do something. Because like you said, seeing devs do something different.
Yeah, dude, look at Amy Hennig. The creator of Uncharted, Nathan fucking Drake. She's doing her own thing. She's working on like two or three projects right now that I'm like, okay, whenever you actually can say more about this stuff, I'm going to be hyped as fuck.
Oh, everybody's going to be paying attention when that happens.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, even there's the I know we're going into this next topic, but it just goes back to what I was saying about it's really cool to see these awesome, talented developers, and they're leaving for some reason or another these big AAA companies, and they're like, no, we're going to do our own thing. We're going to make gaming better by doing our own thing. And it's just bolstering it, I think. And another name that comes to mind is Jason Blundell from Treyarch. I really like his work with Black Ops. I really do. Especially the zombies. I think the zombies is getting a little worse since he left.
The zombies was the thing that saved Black Ops.
Yeah, and he especially with, I think it was Mob of the Dead is when he started it, his run. And Black Ops 3 was like the golden era for Black Ops zombies. And then he, I believe, was the lead of Black Ops 4 entirely. But he has his own studio now. Forgot what the name of it was off the top of my head. But it's really cool to see all these awesome names and they're doing their own thing now.
Yeah.
Including, again, the next story we're going to talk about.
Bruce Straley, who spent years working at Naughty Dog, including being the co-game director on several huge games like The Last of Us and Uncharted 4, has created a new studio called Wildflower Games. In the announcement video, Straley had this to say, quote, In 2017, I left the industry not sure if I wanted to make games anymore. But the longer I was away, I kept thinking about this medium and everything yet to be done and everything I wanted to do. And this idea kept following me. So I grabbed some friends and we started prototyping, and the idea started getting good. It started becoming exciting again, and I realized I need to make this game. But if I'm going to make this game, it means I have to build a team. And if I build a team, I have to build a company. And well, if we're going to do that, then we have to do it the right way. It has to be inclusive, equitable, and collaborative, full of big-hearted people that wanted to grow both professionally and personally. The culture needs to be as iterative as the way we make games. End quote. And also, like John Romero, Straley has an exciting resume. Taylor, man, we jumped the gun a little bit and we started talking about, we got so excited about the idea of these devs doing these big games, going off and doing their own thing. Do you have any other thoughts about this story?
Based on their website, it doesn't seem like they're going to be making like this massive, oh my god, you won't be able to ever predict this cinematic experience or anything like that. But it seems like he's creating a very awesome team, and that's really cool. I think the best part of this was me just listening to the announcement video of him creating Wildflower Interactive. Because I think there's sometimes in gaming where you hear somebody talk and it sounds like they're just putting on a fake voice or something. And
yeah, it sounds very performative.
Yeah, and this just sounded genuine as hell. It's just like, hey, look, I was not going to come back. I was kind of done, but I had this idea. And it just felt like, yeah, sure, it was probably rehearsed and he put it the way he wanted to put it, but it felt like an actual real story. Not something that was fabricated to be like, hey, look, we're putting this new studio. It felt like, yes, this is actually what happened here.
Yeah, I've mentioned on the podcast before, one of my favorite things is seeing and hearing devs being able to take the spotlight and talk about their passion. Because you can always tell, like, it's not some PR nonsense. Like, they're coming under like, oh my goodness, I cannot wait to talk about this. I'm super proud of this thing we created. It's not just some suit with a bunch of buzzwords. It's real people talking about their passion. And to hear a dev, because you and I talked about it earlier, about devs leaving for whatever reason, and mostly because of bad experiences, it's always great to hear them talk about, like, yeah, you know what? I just needed a break. And I'm so passionate about this, like, I had to come back and do it. And hearing him say that, hey, I kept thinking about the medium, I couldn't help myself, I have to make this game, that's a passion project. And those are always the ones that you want to pay attention to. Because, yeah, it's great to have these big AAA blockbuster multi-million dollar cinematic games, but sometimes you just need something that feels like a passion project. And I think that's one thing people love about indie games. Like, you can feel the passion that's in them. And to see what they come up with, I'm excited too, because yeah, he has a resume with The Last of Us and Uncharted 4. So, you know, story wise, he knows how to do storytelling visually. I wouldn't say writing. I don't think he directed, but he didn't write anything. So I don't know. I don't know his writing style, but directing wise, he has an eye for telling a story. And I'm interested in seeing where you go from Naughty Dog and what kind of big ideas you have that you had to come back to the game industry and build a whole new team just to make it.
Yeah. And not only that, I have a quote here from the wildflowergames.com website, where it said, we're making small-ish, creatively charged, uniquely stylized games that explore the possibilities of our medium. So that's why it wasn't like, oh, they're making these massive spectacles. That was the quote that I saw earlier. And also, I'm looking at an article from the nerdstash.com's write-up of this story. I did not catch this. So props to Omar Dursen of the nerdstash.com. I'm going to read directly from his write-up here. His staff is highly experienced. Members of the development team have worked on games like Absu, Kenya, Bridge of Spirits, Astroneer, Call of Duty, and The Pathless, in addition to having experience making games like Uncharted 4 and The Last of Us, which that's what Stray was known for. So this is a, while they're not, it doesn't seem like they're making these huge spectacle games, it's a very fucking talented development team right there.
Yeah, and the thing is, you don't always have to make big games. Some of the best storytellings that we've seen in video games were from small passion projects, like Inside, and even, what is it? The Isaac game. Oh, man, see, now people are going to crucify me. The Binding of Isaac. Like, some of the best storytellings that we've gotten was from smaller, less hugely cinematic games. So, yeah, for somebody who has an eye for directing, for storytelling, the direction, yeah, I'm actually kind of interested in seeing what they're going to do with this game. Like, what kind of story are they going to tell? Especially since he mentioned that he wanted the studio to be more inclusive. So, kind of wondering, what exactly do you mean by that? Like, is it mean you're going to tell stories, like, from other cultures, from other parts of the world? I'm actually interested in seeing how that works out for the studio. And hopefully we don't get a story about how everything was actually kind of abusive and crunchy. Let's try to avoid that one.
I hope not. That's the main thing, too, with all these developers leaving. Whether they're leaving because they had a bad experience with another studio, or kind of like Australia here, seem to be like burnt out terribly in 2017. Yeah. So it's really cool to see these two stories back to back, I think. And it's just something I've noticed. I don't know if this has been a thing for years and it's just been like, Taylor, you're just oblivious to it, you moron. Or it's just something that's becoming more and more of a thing over the past few years, to where these really talented people are going out and doing their own thing. And I'm hoping whenever we start to finally see these games, it's going to pay off.
Oh, yeah, especially since these new powerful systems can do so much for people. All right, and speaking of power, you know what's really powerful? Marvel, especially when it comes to the gaming space. So it begs the question, what do you want to see from Marvel Spider-Man 2? So we're always scouring gaming websites looking for stuff to talk about, including the awesome content that's created every day over at thenerdstash.com. Yes, we're doing a shameless plug, and we will do so every time we can. But we wanted to shout out Richard Warren over at Game Rant for giving us the inspiration for our next topic. Warren recently wrote up an article for Game Rant called Marvel Spider-Man 2 Should Make Suits More Pivotal to the Story. In the piece, Warren talked about how the Marvel Spider-Man franchise has thrived off of key cinematic moments featuring a brand new suit, and made a case for why there should be even more narrative-driven suits in the upcoming sequel. So that article got us thinking, though. And since we are in the unofficial off-season of gaming news, we figured this week was a good week to ask, what do we want to see in Marvel Spider-Man 2? Do you think we should get more narrative-driven suits? What villains do you want to see? And what are you hoping for in terms of the story? Taylor, go ahead and give us all your juicy little ideas.
I think it's best just to have a conversation here rather than trying to answer five questions, so we'll see where this goes. I'm very excited for Marvel Spider-Man 2. The first game is just so damn good. I cannot wait to play Miles Morales. I'm waiting to get a PS5 to play it, and it's probably going to be right before Marvel Spider-Man 2 comes out, so that'll be pretty cool to play Miles Morales then go right into Marvel Spider-Man 2. I think Warren had a good point in the Game Rant article, because there was mentions of like the advanced suit in Marvel Spider-Man, how that was kind of revealed, how big of a moment that felt. And then this is a little bit now spoilers for a 4-year-old game, but the Anti-Ox suit at the end of Marvel Spider-Man, and how big of a moment that was, that big reveal. And I remember playing through that and being like, fuck yeah, that suit looks awesome. That's exactly what I wanted in that moment, that I didn't think the game was going to give it to me. I didn't think I was going to get this cool new suit to combat Doc Ock here, and they actually did it. That was really cool. So yeah, I would love to see more suits like that throughout the next game, including, which was mentioned in the Game Rant article, the symbiote suit. They have to do something with the symbiote suit in this game. You think they have to have some kind of cool feature for whoever ends up wielding it. I think it'll end up being Peter. Maybe it'll be Miles and then Peter. They'll do some kind of twist on it. Yeah, I can see them doing it, having both of them somehow have the suit at different points in the story. But it's probably going to be Peter, regardless. So I think no matter what, you just got to have some kind of really cool ability that symbiote suit has. And yet again, just keep building on these two different Spider-Men. Miles has his cool abilities, have Peter have his cool abilities, so they don't also feel samey when you're playing as them.
Yeah, I think that they shouldn't go too far on the cinematic suits. Like, I get it, having them pop up every now and again for story purposes. Like you said in the last Spider-Man games, when Peter had to take on Doc Ock, it had a good reason why Peter had a completely different suit from what he started off with.
Yeah, if it doesn't fit narratively, don't like go overdo it. But I like that. It kind of feels like that's something Spider-Man does a lot too.
Oh, especially in the comics.
Okay. So I'm not a big comic reader, so I don't know if he does that a lot in the comics, but especially when we look at something like the MCU, and they're doing it, of course, because they're trying to sell toys and merch and shit, of course.
Yeah. But
at the same time, it kind of works by having multiple suits in each movie here. And I really like that about the character, that he's making all these new suits and shit like that. So I think you can also tie that into the story and get something cool out of it, like that moment with Doc Ock. But you don't want to, like, as you said, put a square peg in a round hole here.
Yeah, it'll get reduced. Because in the comics, Peter, being a super genius that he is always building new gadgets to help him fight crime. Because I think Peter doesn't really just rely on his brute strength, despite the point that he is one of the physically strongest members in the Avengers, pretty much being outdone only by like Hulk and maybe Thor. I don't know, they've shown that Peter is capable of much more, but I'd still say Thor physically is stronger than Peter. But it's not even depending on what comic, by Marvel lore. But anyway, within the comics, every now and again, Peter would come with a new suit, not just to change styles, but because, oh, I'm taking on Electro, so I have to make this this suit that can take electricity. It has seams and inlines that helps him withstand Electro's thunder attacks. Another, like when he goes up against a character that has super strength and he's not strong enough, you got like the Scarlet Spider and whatnot with the extra limbs. I still think that was more like a designer's choice from the artist, but, you know, he used that to brace himself when he needs extra strength or whatever. And there was the Iron Spider suit. The original Iron Spider suit got destroyed in, like, one comic or one episode or something like that. It didn't last long. It was flawed because it got froze over and it broke. It shattered. So it goes to show that, yeah, why Peter does make all these suits, they don't work all the time. And sometimes you're just like, yeah, let's not do a metallic suit anymore. Despite the point that, ironically enough, Iron Spider is still, in the comics, before the MCU, Iron Spider was still one of my favorite Spidey suits. I had the toy for that. Back in the day, there used to be Spider-Man toys where you can flip the head around like they did with the Power Rangers. That kind of like changed his outfit. Not really, but it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
They had the Iron Spider-Man suit, and that was my favorite Spider-Man toy. But I digress. So yeah, doing it story-wise for the games, I could see them having Peter experiment with different suits. Like maybe...
Well, in the announced trailer, he does have the Iron Spider suit. Or not suit, but he has the Iron Spider legs.
Yeah, we're going up against Venom. Venom, physically speaking, can go pound to pound with even Hulk. So yeah, it would kind of make sense because, like I said earlier, he had those like brace himself for extra strength, momentum, and all that. It also helped his movement while he was running on walls and whatnot. It allowed him to move quicker than if he were to use his own limbs. Peter did it to give himself momentum and movement advantage. So I can't wait to see what they do with that in the game, because of course they're gonna have to do more than just use it to punch things. They're gonna have to use it
when it was in the first game around. But it wasn't a it was just an ability, wasn't it?
It was just a suit you can use.
So, I agree with you. I think if you're gonna incorporate it, which based on this announced trailer they're gonna do it, you gotta figure out some kind of way to make it worth your time. That's not just like, oh look, it's your Spider-Man ability that you press, what is it, the left click button and you do it. It's gotta be something that's like, oh okay, so this is something I'll get gameplay wise that I don't get with Miles. And when you play Miles, you have all the electric abilities and shit like that. It's really cool. So I think that's the key thing gameplay-wise with this game, that they just, I think you got to figure out how to balance those two characters and make them both feel so fun to play as.
I don't think it's going to be that difficult, because if you played Marvel Spider-Man and then play Marvel Spider-Man Miles Morales, why they had similarities and points is only because, let's face it, there's only so many ways you can have somebody swing around. They still felt different enough. Like the way Miles would flail around when he first learned how to swing was really fun. You can see how he progressed, and his fighting style, while a little sloppier than Peter, still felt like his own unique way. And from the way the announcement trailer looked, it seems like they're going to incorporate maybe not co-op, but like both Peter and Miles fighting together.
You're saying more like a GTA.
Maybe they'll do something like that, but I mean more like gameplay wise where they can use different abilities in a team up attack like they did before. They had one where Peter would swing a character and then Miles would attack. It was on the trailer. What game was I'm thinking of? Batman, like in Batman Arkham series, when you got it was a Arkham chance,
Knight, wasn't it? When you teamed up with Nightwing and Robin.
And Barbara. Yeah, I think, was it that one? I just remember it was one of the arguments. I can't remember which one it was. But like when they did with that, where you played as Batman for a second, then if you do a team attack, you play as the other Bat family member for a bit, and it just switches back and forth. I'm wondering if that's what they're going to do with this one, and if they are incorporating suits into the story, will those team attacks reflect that? And movement-wise, like you said, will it actually change up the way both characters played?
What was that game? It wasn't... I remember it not being very good, but people really liked aspects of it. Where Venom was the villain, but... And, like, the symbiote was taking over everything, including Wolverine. Do you remember what I'm talking about, or...?
Because
I remember there was, like, symbiote abilities for Peter in that game. Like, when he was using the symbiote suit, he had certain things he could do. And when he was in the normal suit, he had certain things he could do. I think that would be really damn cool if they end up doing that in this game somehow. Wish you knew that off the top of your head.
Yeah, me too. Oh, my goodness. Watch, somebody's listening to this episode like, oh, my goodness, these idiots, it's this game. It's this one. This is the one you're thinking about. I can't believe you can't remember that. Wait, was it one of the old Activision games?
Web of Shadows. It was Web of Shadows.
Oh, okay. Web of Shadows.
Because I'm looking at Venom Wolverine right now.
Okay, I was thinking about the Ultimate game from Activision.
That's awesome. But, it's just, I think that would be really cool. That's something they can implement gameplay-wise. And again, we're not even talking about something, anything in the story either.
Yeah, this is just all theories and maybe what we like to see.
And we're just talking games. See, that's the shit I really like, too, about Insomniac nailed this first Spider-Man game. In an era to where these superhero games, other than Batman Arkham, kind of sucked. Like, Batman Arkham is by far, it was the most successful superhero game franchise in history.
Oh yeah, it even had people copy its combat style for a little while.
Including Spider-Man, which worked like a fucking charm. So it was really cool to see, like, Marvel Spider-Man knock it out of the park like this, to where now they're, like, setting up, okay, Miles Morales. And that game was so applauded. Now we're going to this game, and we're talking for, what, about 20 minutes now? Like, oh, they can add these suits. It would be really cool if they add the symbiotes, and they have certain powers here. And also, going to the story here, I kind of want Eddie Brock in this thing. I know it doesn't really make narrative sense. Well, you know Harry's probably going to be Venom in this thing.
Oh, I hope not. I don't assume
so. Because we're going into full spoilers here for Marvel Spider-Man, but Harry's the one who had the symbiote attached to him in Marvel Spider-Man. So, I mean, that's why I kind of assume they're going to go through with Harry Venom. That sounded weird. But
Harry Venom.
And go through with that Venom, and then they're going to probably do something with the symbiote suit attaching itself to one to Spider-Man, and then back to another character, which I assume would be Harry again. But it would be cool if it was Eddie somehow. But then you also are dealing with Kraven, who I can't wait. I've wanted Kraven to join the MCU forever. And
Sony's been working on that Kraven movie for a while.
Yeah. And hell, it's not even just me. It was really cool that both John Watts, who made the MCU Spider-Man movies, wanted to use Kraven. I think if that multiverse stuff didn't work out with No Way Home, I think John Watts has been on record saying Kraven was the next candidate for the villain. And Ryan Coogler, I think, who he directs Black Panther 2, he directed Black Panther 1, and I think he said before that he wanted to do Kraven.
Oh, yeah, I think he brought up Kraven too.
Yeah, and I'm just like, see, use this man. He is awesome.
Yeah, Kraven would actually work in Black Panther and Spider-Man with him being such a game hunter.
Yeah.
Africa would be a place to where game hunters go, so.
It's just really cool, like, how cool this Venom, not Venom, but how cool this villain is. We're going to have two of the most badass Spider-Man villains in this game as the main antagonist.
Kraven has always been a bit of a fan favorite. Not as much as Venom, but still, Kraven has been, like, the one. I think even in the Sam Raimi movies, I think Sony went to bring in Kraven. Because they were
doing that 90s animated series. Just, it propped Venom up on a fucking pedestal. I don't think he's ever been able to get. I know the comics have done a great deal and they make him very popular too, but those early animated, the 90s animated series, just, it was so good.
There was a comic book nerd that I used to watch on YouTube and Twitter and all that other stuff. He actually did like a really cool thing to where he was talking about the different history of comic books. And apparently Venom was just popular enough to where Marvel kept him around, but he was never super popular in comics. Like, even comic viewers were like, yeah, he's a cool villain, but there's nothing to him. Like, everybody still wanted Green Goblin and Kraven and Venom. I mean, not Venom, but Shocker and Scorpion. But yeah, like you said, it was the cartoons that really brought him to popularity.
Yeah, so outside of those two, though, Kraven and Venom, who, again, based on the popularity, you can easily see Insomniac being like, okay, we want Doc Ock and Sinister Six in the first one. We're going to do Green Goblin in the second one. They could have just rushed it. But I'm really glad. They still might do Green Goblin. Who knows? Because Doc Ock was kind of a surprise. But it's really cool that they're like, no. We're going to use two fan-favorite characters that aren't necessarily used too much in media. Venom is now, but Kraven especially hasn't been used, and I really appreciate that. But other than those two villains, who would you like to see in this game? We got Sinister Six in the first one.
I would actually like to see Insomniac Game come up with like a new villain, because they're good with characters. So I would actually like to see them be able to like add to the Spider-Man lore. That would just be kind of cool to see.
There would be comparisons to Arkham Knight out of the gate. You know damn well, Michael, if they announce that they're creating an original villain, it's going to be like, oh, is this just like Rocksteady did with Arkham Knight?
Well, no, that's the thing. I don't want them to use like a legacy character like they did with Arkham, Yeah, they sort of remade Red Hood. I just want to see Insomniac come up with a new villain or something. I don't know. Not like as a whole game, but like see them leave their stamp on the in the Spider-Man world by creating a new character that's so super cool that it integrates into the comics. I don't know why, but I just think that'd be really cool to see an Insomniac game made video Insomniac Games made villain go from video game to the comics rather than the comics to the video games. I just think that'd be really cool. Through the Spider-Man license, I would like to see Kraven. But I also like to see the Hobgoblin. I would like to see how Insomniac Games would do Harry, because they really did.
You think it'd be Harry as the Hobgoblin? and not Ned Leeds? Or...
I mean, I know, I'm just saying I would like to see Harry as the Hobgoblin, because I like the idea of Peter struggling with fighting his friend. That's the one thing I really like about Spider-Man. Peter Parker suffering from having to be... I'm sorry, but it's true.
it's such a weird thing, but it's like, what do you want to see in a Spider-Man movie? I don't know, you know, one of his loved ones died. I think that would be something that would be pretty interesting. Yeah, that's the thing. That's, like, what? What's wrong with you?
That's the thing I really liked about Spider-Man. That's the one thing I like about Peter Parker. It's like, he wasn't flawless. This man struggled hard. Whether it was in school, like he was going to college, while trying to hold a job, hold a relationship, still try to stick things out with his aunt without her finding out who he was, keeping his secret identity, all these things building up on him, and still seeing him being so optimistic when he fights villains and trying to get through his life. I was like, man, this is such a cool character. Like, that's why I thought Spider-Man was cooler than Superman, Batman, Iron Man, Captain America, yeah, all these other heroes, because they were all either like super Boy Scout or super edgy, while Peter was just like, I gotta hold it together because I love this city and I love what I do, whether it's as a regular person trying to do his job as a journalist, as a photographer, or being Spider-Man and swinging around.
Yeah, in the first game, he loses his apartment. And it's like, he could easily just be making money and doing his own thing, but instead he's working with Doc Ock, and yeah, he's not making any money, so he loses his apartment midway through the game, and it's a story mission where you're trying to get his stuff back, and I'm just like, man, this guy's been through it. He could easily, yeah, just be a dick about it, but, and that's why I think also, not even just Peter, but, and this is off topic from the games, I guess it's not, because Miles is also here, but I think the other Spider characters, whether it be Gwen or Miles, I think that's why they fit so well. It's because they kind of, I don't know, it's just something about their personalities that's like, yeah, They're Spider-Man or Spider-Woman. Like, they fit perfectly. And what we, I think, people who watch Spider-Man media envision what Spider-Man should be. And going back to the villains, though, I want to see Mysterio and the Lizard.
See, I knew I was going to ask if you thought the Lizard should show up.
I know because... that they referenced, I think, both of them in the first game.
Yeah.
But... I don't, and there's some, I wouldn't do anything like the villains team up again. You just did the Sinister Six. So I would keep it to where, like, you have a bunch of badass villains. You probably, I could see Insomniac making Mysterio comedic. Just because that's what the character's mostly been outside of really Far From Home.
Right. Well, the thing is, and the way Mysterio can manipulate things, like, not through actual reality, but the way he is able to use illusions. Oh, man, it's something that games can have all kinds of fun with level designs with that one.
Yeah, and they'll get more comparisons to the Scarecrow. And Arkham with Mysterio. Oh, see,
the way Arkham did that one, they did more horror with, yeah, with that Scarecrow, which is really fitting, which I really liked. And
it'll be more trippy with Mysterio. Yeah. Which I think the game's done that, too, actually. There's... Even though they've been bad, a lot of them, there's a lot of these Spider-Man games that you can take some stuff from and be like, no, they did this right. We should take that and make it into our own thing. So hopefully that's what Insomniac does. I just hope they use a lot of new villains here that we haven't seen before. I would also like to see... I think he's actually in Miles Morales. I was going to say the Prowler, but I think he was already done.
Oh, yeah. No, wait. Yeah, they did something with the Prowler there, but he could also come back.
That's what I would do. I'm very excited for this game, though, regardless of any of our predictions or theories come true.
Oh, well, going on from superhero to superstars, Madden NFL 23 ratings has been revealed. And also, we're going to talk about how we're feeling about the NFL franchise. All right, let's get into some sports talks on the gaming podcast. Don't worry, it's irrelevant. We also saved the story for last. So anyone who doesn't care about sports or Madden can go ahead and either skip to our last few segments, or they can click off the podcast a little early. Please don't. I know you said you could, but please don't. We love having you here.
I know it's also a podcasting sin, by the way, to be like, go ahead. But you know what? We're doing things.
Leave. Get out of here.
We're committing those podcasting sins. Just because we know not everybody are sports fans, especially if you click on us for a gaming podcast. So we figured Madden should be the topic we close out with.
Yeah, because even though Madden's like a huge franchise in video games, surprisingly enough, not a lot of gaming folks actually enjoy Madden, oddly enough. It seems like people who like sports. Well, okay, that's not true. I do know for a fact that a lot of people who like sports games simply buy the console just so they can play Madden NBA. I've known people who only purchase Madden, FIFA, and or NBA games every year. Like, that's the games they play. That and Grand Theft Auto. So, yeah, it's a big
thing. Is it weird that I know exactly, not who specifically you're talking about, but, like, I'm pretty sure I can name off a few people that I know who do the same thing.
No, it's not, I don't think it's weird at all, because it's actually very common. Yeah, there's plenty of people who buy just those. Oh, no, I'm sorry, and Call of Duty. So, you know, Madden is...
Yeah, it would be switching out GTA for Call of Duty.
Yeah. For the people out. Yeah, it's either one of those two, yeah. All right, so Madden 23 is right around the corner, and EA, as always, have been dropping their top 10 highest-rated players for each position. This has caused a bit of a ruckus online, as some notable names have been left off the top 10, which I'm sure EA is always thrilled about. So before we get into a larger discussion around how we think the Madden NFL franchise is doing and where we think it should go, let's have some fun and humor with these ratings. Taylor, are there any snubs or vastly overrated players that you see in the list of these top 10s? And before you answer that, I have to make it known for everybody here, at the time of this recording, only the wide receivers, edge rushers, and running backs have been released. While we're recording this, it's on the 20th, July 20th. July 21st is when cornerbacks and the D-lines will be released. The 22nd is when we'll hear about quarterbacks and the 99 club and NFL team ratings in general. So if you don't hear us talk about some of the players, it's because unfortunately not all the ratings are out at the time of this recording. So, Taylor, from the ones that we have seen and do know of, what are your thoughts?
I don't know if you mentioned this. We also have linebackers and kickers. So, if you want to talk about kickers, we can do that, too.
I'm a Cowboys fan, so when it comes to kickers... stuff. Yeah, we have... wait, what?
Dolphins fan here. It's not much better for me.
We're both suffering.
No, I am looking through these. Since I am on the subject here, Justin Tucker here, top kicker, should be great. And also safeties are on here too. I think the first thing that really pops out, and again, we're just humoring this, because I think I see these Madden ratings every year, and you see players lose their minds and people on Twitter lose their minds. And to me, it's more so just like, EA is just trying to drum up social media engagement by doing this, which they should. And it's just, for me, I take a look at the state of the game, and I'm just sitting there like, seems like you care more about the ratings than making the game better sometimes. Which we'll talk about. I have some good and bad things to say about the state of the game.
Oh, yeah, but, especially since every year they have their 99 club, and they always send out like these little care packages, not care packages, but these little award packages to players, and they make a big marketing deal out of that. So yeah, you're right, they really do seem to have more fun with coming up with ratings than they do with like making sure the game runs correctly.
But looking through these here, I would say the biggest thing, I'm very glad they finally moved Jonathan Taylor up. He's at 95. Well, how is Christian McCaffrey still so high? Like, I'm a fan of Run CMC, but he hasn't been healthy in like 3 years.
Somebody's a fan.
Apparently somebody is. Your boy Zeke is near the bottom of the top 10 here, so he's still making it. I would probably argue Tony Pollard maybe be above him right now, but wide receivers, I think Jamar Chase broke every single receiving record for rookie. I know he's young as hell, and Madden, I think they're trying to take that into account, that when people do a franchise, he's going to go up. That said, there are some names that I'm looking at that are above him, and I'm like, how? Just how? Adam Thielen, also a fan of Adam Thielen, no business being above Jamar Chase. Seeing Devontae Adams as a member of the 99 club, that seems pretty deserved in my opinion. I've never really been a massive fan of Amari Cooper. I think he's really good, but I don't know. I always felt like he was a low end wide receiver one, high end wide receiver two. But that's just me.
Really, Coop?
Yeah, I always thought Coop. It's just he fluctuates too much. He's not as consistent.
Okay, well, okay, again, I'm a Cowboys fan, so losing Amari Cooper was like a huge deal for me.
Yeah, for what y'all gave him up for, too. Wild. We had to give up, like, 3 firsts and 2 seconds, it felt like, for Tyreek Hill. Well, it wasn't 3 firsts. It was our entire draft this year, but...
Everybody gave up so much of their drafts over the past year. Yeah. But, yeah, seeing Coop go to the Browns is just so weird to me, especially since...
Baker Mayfield. He's going to Carolina.
No, is he?
Yeah, Baker got traded to Carolina, and Drew Locke and Geno Smith are in a quarterback battle, unfortunately, over there in Seattle. I'm sorry if you're a Seattle Seahawks fan. You had a lot of great years with Russell Wilson, and I don't know why Seattle decided to get rid of him, but that's where they are.
Yeah, so I'm looking at the top 10 for the wide receivers, and, I mean, Kupp, yeah, I can see Kupp being pretty high up there. I know a lot of people love Tyreek Hill. Hopkins, I'm surprised to see them have him, like, just right there with Diggs. Diggs was, I mean, hey, I'm not a Buffalo fan, especially since, you know, Cowboys fan over here. But Diggs had a hell of a season. And to see him...
D-Hop's like, awesome, don't get me wrong, but he's also been injured a lot the past year. And plus, he suspended the first half of the season, I think. At least 6 games.
I guess they... put him in the right spot.
The biggest thing for me, this will be the last thing I say the entire time when it comes to ratings. How in the hell is Max Crosby, who plays for the Las Vegas Raiders, he's an edge rusher, how is he not even in the top 10? Max Crosby, if you look at his stats and what he does for that defense, is arguably, he should be about number 2 or number 3. And it's not even close, in my opinion. Like, it should be Myles Garrett, TJ Watt, and then Max Crosby. Back to back to back.
Where did they put him?
He's not even in the top 10. I think he's in the top 15. But he's not even in the top 10.
50. I see. Garrett's also part of the 99 club. But my thing is, they have a lot of ties here when it comes to their edge runners. Warner and Bosa, I mean, they're on the same team, but, like, they're both 94. Mack, David, and Miller all at 92. Wagner and Jordan at 91. DeMarcus Lawrence at 90. Yeah, I could kind of see that. Now, come on, Parsons should be in the 90s.
I think that's a similar thing with Ja'Marr Chase there, man, where I think they're looking at a player who's so young and, like, oh, no, when they do franchise, he's going to go up. And I still kind of disagree with it. This is where I think the ratings, if you're going to treat the ratings so seriously, I think you got to basically put it in a franchise ratings and then a real ratings for play now and kind of put like tags to it, which we'll talk about whenever we get to the new features, new in quotations there. But there are tags to players now.
I think for Michael Parsons, I think the biggest thing that I guess hurt him with his Madden ratings was his ability or his inability to cover.
Micah Parsons shouldn't even be under the linebacker position, in my opinion. He should be under the edge rushers.
I mean, well, the thing is, they got the linebackers as part of edge rushers.
Yeah.
They put a lot of them, they stuff a lot of them together.
But yeah, that's all I have to really say here. There's some things I also kind of disagree with. But overall, that's just subjective over what I see when I'm watching a football game. Like, I'm a huge fan of the Honey Badger. I'm not sure he's the best safety in football right now, but I can't really hate on him being the best rated safety in football. And there's a few other players here where I'm like, ah, that's interesting.
Like you, I actually haven't been paying attention to Madden in years. My brother still plays. In fact, my brother refuses to play Madden 22. He's been playing Madden 19 via Game Pass, and after that went away, he's now playing Madden 21. He's forcing himself to play the newer ones because even though he's a big fan of Madden, he'll tell you that, yeah, no, it's been going downhill to the point to where you want to play the older stuff rather than the newer ones, because the new stuff removes so much and try to bring it back and pretend it's new that my brother's gotten tired of it. But yeah,
it's interesting that you say that, though. Yes, that's what we're
going to talk
about.
Yeah, because that's our next big thing. Madden NFL 23 is going to implement some, and I'm using finger quotes here, new, and yes, we are using that term loosely, gameplay mechanic, including field sense, a revamp of gameplay from the quarterbacks to the defensive backs. Franchise mode is also getting new changes, which is honestly kind of shocking because that has been one of the most ignored features in Madden history for a while.
They usually take a year, focus on it, skip a year, and then when everybody complains, go back, focus on it.
Rinse and repeat. They pretend they're focusing on it, and then you find out they probably have like one new training camp mode or something like that. But they're also making changes to the system, including trade logic and draft logic, which has been improved along with a new free agency hub. Free agency now has new visuals. Players have motivational tags outside of just money. And, for example, Jarvis Landry has a motivation tag called Close to Home. Since he played college ball at LSU, a good contract from the New Orleans Saints would probably outweigh a similar contract by a team on the West Coast. On top of that, there is a set limit for the number of free agents you can sign at one time, meaning that you will have to be strategic while signing big-name free agents. The number of free agents you can sign at the time will increase with each signing period, with the last signing period giving you free reign to sign as many players as you want. Now, admittedly, a lot of these features have actually been in Madden games before, so they aren't necessarily new, and also not all of them are necessarily good. For example, there were many complaints about the scouting system in Madden NFL 22, and it seems like Madden NFL 23 is only building onto that system. So we'll leave links to the various videos EA's dropped for Madden 23 in the descriptions of this episode. But Taylor, how are you feeling about Madden NFL 23 based on what we know about the gameplay and franchise? And more importantly, how are you feeling about Madden franchise in general?
I'm going to start with the positives, and before we get into anything here, I have to reiterate, because every time you mention, I think, anything good about the Madden franchise, people go, oh, but you know they're just recycling stuff that's been in the games before. Yeah, but also, a lot of stuff they're recycling was good, so I want all that stuff back in the game, and I want them just to build on it and make it better, and also add on to it. But when it comes to the franchise stuff, kind of pleasantly surprised. Draft logic and trade logic need a major overhaul, and hopefully it has been overhauled because it was been really fucking stupid. I got really tired of playing a franchise and a team that just drafted a quarterback or has a star quarterback would draft a quarterback in the next year's draft. Really dumb. Doesn't make any sense. Same thing with trade logic. Would be not giving up players that really seem like they're on the outs, and then vice versa, to where you can get some kind of older player for cheap as hell, and you'd be like, oh no, that's okay, I guess I got this awesome star player for nothing. So it's really cool they're doing that. The free agency hub with the tags and all that stuff, that's really cool too. I like how they're adding motivations for players. That's something I've wanted Madden to bring back for years. That said, with all the franchise stuff they got, there's still things that kind of irk me, including the scouting system. I love the scouting process. I love the draft process in real life. The NFL draft is one of the most exciting parts of the offseason to me. The scouting system they introduced in Madden 22, I just hated it. It was bad. I could not stand it, and it seems like they're just doubling down with this one to me. When it comes to draftees, I don't like the menus. Everything looks the same as it has in past years, UI-wise, other than Free Agency Hub. So that's unfortunate. And when it comes to the draftees and create a player and all this stuff, I have an image from the trailer. It's literally in the trailer, two of the exact same faces, because they don't have a lot of faces that you could use in the game. And It's just, it's kind of ridiculous. The fact that, like, the customization, I think, is very lacking. The amount of different faces they put in the game are very lacking. And it's been that way for fucking years, man. There's no creative team. There's none of that stuff that's been in the game before. Yeah, they're adding a lot of stuff back. In terms of gameplay, I really like some of the stuff they're adding back. But it still feels like what I want from this franchise is for them to take a year off. I know they're never going to do it. That said, it looks like Call of Duty's doing it, so I guess pigs can't fly. So I just think Madden needs to take 1 year off and just really reassess everything about this game.
Yeah, I think that's one of the things. If you watch Angry Joe, that's one of the things they brought up was the faces. If you,
I remember that two faces or something like that. That was great.
Yeah, if you try to make a white player, you get like maybe 10, 12 different faces. You try to make someone else, not so much. But if you try to make a black player, you get like 24, 32 faces with like 2, 3 of them being the same. Madden has this weird creative character thing to where it's so imbalanced that you could find repeats. To see this in prospect mode in the trailer, it's really weird. This isn't the first time Madden's trailer has shown some of their screw-ups. I believe one of the trailers for last year's Madden showed how the ball placement that they tried, like, yeah, we have new precision mode, wasn't really what they said it was because people found mistakes in the way the ball position actually worked. It's like, man, if you guys don't even care enough to make sure your trailers look good, it goes to show that you don't really care about the game in general.
I'm sure, when we're talking about this game and the faults and everything, I'm sure there are people on the dev team who put in hours, who put a lot of shit into it. It's just, it's hard to feel like the focus on the franchise overall from a top view down is not solely on Ultimate Team first and making money first off of microtransactions. And that's where I think a lot of the players have that's their first problem, is like, no, focus on creating a great game overall, like Madden used to be. The fact that there used to be assistant coaches in games, man. I remember playing it like last year. It was like Madden 06 or something. I found it. And I put it into my laptop, I was just going through, and I was like, shit, they have John Harbaugh here as a special teams coach before he's a head coach. That's really cool. And it would be really awesome to have actually assistant coaches that are in the NFL in Madden. But they have head coaches, just not the assistant coaches. So you would want to go and do that. So as a Dolphins fan, I could have last year went out and got Mike McDaniel from the 49ers staff to be my head coach in the offseason or something like that. That would have been awesome to see. But I can't do that. I have to get some kind of random coach who has certain, I guess, assets to him, which is just generic. And I think that's something I also have a problem with the whole franchise, is it just kind of looks generic right now, to where I think you take a year off and you get another chance to reassess everything. I think you would probably get a lot more stuff done really with it. In terms of the gameplay, it's just, there's stuff here I like the field sense for the quarterback and how more, just, it looks like more control you're going to have over your throws, which is really cool. I like the wide receiver DB battles.
Field sense is just a marketing term. Not towards you, but like for anybody who's wondering what the heck field sense is, it's just a marketing term. It comes like, oh, you now have more precision to where you're going to put the ball. It's like, wait, you guys have a trailer like that? Not even 2 or 3 years ago? Talking about how it's all about battling on the field and putting positions. Because they were doing a thing to where they were really, really putting Patrick Mahomes up there. And they're like, you can play like Patrick Mahomes and put the ball exactly where you need to and throw it through the pocket and blah, blah, blah. It's like, man, this sounds very familiar. Like, we have something new called field sense. It's like, no. And I think somebody, I forgot who it was, I saw a video, somebody brought up that they had something like that in their old EA's NCAA games, in the old college games. So it looks like they're just reusing what they had back in their old college games and reusing it here in Madden. which is kind of strange seeing how they also have their their college game coming out next year, aren't they? So maybe
I think it's next year. But here's my thing here. Here's kind of where I'm at with Madden overall. I'm kind of more impressed than I thought I would be from everything shown about Madden 23 so far. That said, it's such a fucking low bar. But at the same time, I just think the foundation of the game, I kind of have problems with just the Frostbite engine and the way it runs. There's just something about, like, even how the players look and run on the field that's weird. And there's nothing Madden's been able to do that's been able to shake that feeling for me. So it's even the engine they're running, I think I kind of have a problem with. But that being said, when it comes to this game, this single game Madden 23, I think it is a step so far from what we're seeing. We're going to still have to play it. I'm sure it's going to be buggy as hell and all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
It should be on paper, needs to be said on paper, should be an improvement. Will it be?
Should be.
That's the question.
I'm glad you brought up the Frostbite engine. Remember when they tried to make physics like part of the tackles animation? Instead of having canned tackle animation, they're like, we're using the Frostbite engine's physics to dictate tackles, and how bugged out and weird that looked when everybody was just flopping around when they just stepped on a pebble.
Yeah, I remember. Which Madden? Because it feels like they did that in a lot of them.
Oh, wow. I think it was different back on the Xbox One, PlayStation 4 days. Ooh, I want to say like Madden 19, Madden 20, Madden 18. It wasn't too long ago. I forget when they stopped using it because they don't talk about it anymore. They try not to use real physics anymore. So I don't even know if they're still doing that.
Well, that's what they showed in the gameplay overview. Is they wanted to use more authentic animations.
Ooh, so maybe they're like doing
that's for the tackling. I forgot what it's called, what their marketing term was for that. It's hit everything. What's the marketing term for that? It was 360 degrees running, I think. Wide receiver versus DB battles. And hit everything. I forgot what they call it, quarterback.
Yeah. I think the quarterback is the one with the field sense.
What field sense is, like all four of those. It's the big marketing term for all four. Yeah. And that's where I think we talked about, like, with our earlier stories about, like, game developers, and they're just speaking from the heart what they actually think. And we see something from this, from Madden, and it's just a bunch of marketing misfeel.
Yeah, it's just instead,
honestly, I'm going to be honest with you. If a Madden developer or somebody from EA wanted to come out and be like, hey, look, we're putting a lot of stuff that you guys liked about Madden games in the past back into the game this year. We're also changing the way the animations work to make it hopefully more realistic. I would probably feel better about it instead of putting it behind so many corporate buzzwords. Make it seem brand new. That's the part of it that kind of has a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, it's because they don't really have to try. They're the only football game out there. It's the only NFL licensed game out there.
Yeah.
Mutt makes so much money for them. Like
Simulation NFL games. 2K is still making their NFL games, supposedly.
Who knows what that
ends up being.
Yeah, it's going to be more arcadey. I don't even think they make improvements to Mutt. To Madden Ultimate Team. Like, they didn't even market that one. They don't have to market that. It's just like, yeah, it's here. It's the same as last year and the year before that. Have fun spending real world money on fake cards again.
There are, like, even though we're complaining a lot, I do like a lot of the stuff that they showed here. I don't want to make it seem like it's all, like, terrible and bad.
Well, my problem is Madden, at least since Madden 20... they just been having some weird issues to where it feels like the devs either don't have enough time to implement some of the quote-unquote new ideas they want
to
do.
Well, this is, yeah, not to interrupt you again, but this is where we go back to something like Call of Duty, and people are like, these developers, they don't have much time. Yeah, we have other studios working on Call of Duty games here, but it's still a quick turnaround. They're asking these Madden developers to be like, all right, you got to make a game. All right, your game comes out. All right, you got to fix your game because it's buggy as hell. All right, a few months later. All right, we got to get started on the next one. It's like, what is this? You have pretty much a live service game right in front of you, but it's an annual release. That doesn't make any fucking sense.
Well, unfortunately, I think if EA really had their way, they would make Madden a live service game. It'd probably be like a 10-year live service game. But for what I know, it's within their contract with NFL that they have to release a new game every year. And that's part of the license deal. And the only reason I know that,
as far as the license deal, then that needs to be addressed at some point, I think.
To where it does,
EA needs, if EA is going to make anything, I think, substantial to get people back on track with the franchise, it can't be done the way it is right now. I just don't think there's even enough time in the annual release schedule for you to be like, okay, we're going to, everything that we talked about from a Frostbite engine, even if they took everything we said, which is just our this is our opinions. People have different problems with Madden. Some people think some things that we thought was stupid was fine. It's just our stupid opinions. Even if EA sat down, listened to this podcast, and said, we're going to listen to these two idiots, and we're going to implement everything they said, making a new engine, or putting Madden in a new engine, doing all these overhauls, the franchise gameplay, and all this shit, you don't have enough time to do that in 1 year of development.
Yeah.
That's just not how it works.
I think EA needs to do what Activision eventually did with Call of Duty. Look, you have all these studios. Instead of shutting them down, make two, three of them a Madden studio. Like, have one studio work on Madden, and, like, they release a new game.
I could see that working more. I could see that being, if you can't get out of the NFL, sounds weird because I've been wanting for years to be like, NFL, you need to drop EA as an exclusive license. Let EA make a Madden game, but let other people do it. But if it is a licensing thing to where they have to make a game annually, I think that might be the solution, is to have multiple studios making a Madden game.
Yeah, and I don't understand why EA hasn't done that. I don't know, it's because they feel that it has to be consistent, and that consistency makes the game feel the same every year. I guess it's safe for them to have, like, only one studio, have one main studio do it, and then have, like, a bunch of their other studios do support. But yeah, I would like to see EA make that change to where they're like, okay, we have a studio that works on Madden. They're going to be our sledgehammer. We're going to another team to be our sledgehammer.
Yeah, sledgehammer, Treyarch, Infinity Ward. Yeah, over there at that division making games right now. Like
have somebody come in and do that, and some of your smaller studios can still do support. But I think if EA wanted to make improvements to Madden, that's the way to do it. At least then it'd be like, oh, there's no consistency. Yeah, but it won't feel the same every year. It'll feel like, okay, this is Tiberian's Madden, or this is whatever other studio EA has. EA Atlanta.
Not only that, but you have more time for these developers to go, okay, we want to focus on franchise this year. Okay, what can we do? Other than just, because it seems like also they have to prioritize, like, okay, what was the complaint about franchise? All right, people didn't like free agency. People don't like draft logic. Okay, we didn't do the draft logic and trade logic things that we were supposed to do in Madden 22, so we have to do that this year. Okay, so let's deal with free agency. All right, we can't mess with franchise anymore because now we have to get the game out.
And I think that's the thing. I think they do take these complaints to heart. But the thing is, like you said, they don't have time to implement them within a year. So I think they do work on them like a couple years, ago, and they just got to work the way they can just implement it. And because of that, they don't have much time to actually implement everything they want to. So I kind of feel like they're cherry picking on what they're improving, and they're probably like in Madden 21. It's like, okay, let's work on trade logic, and it, like you said, it didn't make it into 22, but they got it to work for 23, and they're like, okay, what else are we working on? Franchise mode. They worked on that in, like, maybe Madden 21 or Madden 20, and finally got it to where they're like, okay, we can implement it to Madden 23. It kind of makes it feel like every Madden is a beta and an early access for the next Madden. Yeah.
That's what we're saying. Like, it's a weird process that Madden has right now, to where it feels like they're constantly in, like you said, a beta, early access, a live service game, and then for some reason, every year around the same time, it's like, well, here's a new Madden. Here, give us more money. And it's like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Oh, that one's done. We're putting this, all the stuff that you had in that one, some of it we took out, but some of it we brought over to this new one. And we're asking for $60 more, please.
Yeah,
$70 more, depending on who's,
no, yeah, no, they like up to 120 if you want that premium good stuff.
Depends on the additions there, and that's the thing too. And I want to kind of close this out on a little bit of a positive though, because again, we've been harping on negatives about the franchise overall and what we think the franchise should do, which we both kind of agree they should somehow figure out a way to either get more studios involved or take a year off or something. It just, there's something about this that feels like they just can't get everything done that people want. And no matter how great this game I think would have looked, I still think people would complain. Just because the foundation of what Madden is right now is just kind of broken. So, just to end this on a positive note, I do like a lot of these franchise changes they added. Especially the motivation tag. Especially the new franchise hub. I like the fact that you're going to be more selective when you're making these free agent signings. You're not going to be able to just go through a free agency and get everybody on the first wave. You're going to have rollover cap room. That's going to be pretty cool. The improved draft logic especially, I can't wait for, because I am a franchise person. That's what I usually play when I get on Madden. So what takes me out of it more than anything in a franchise is seeing a great team. For example, I think I had this. Yeah, I did. I had the Cincinnati Bengals, who went to the Super Bowl last year. In a franchise mode, they had the second overall pick. They took a quarterback. Why? I have no earthly idea. But they took a quarterback. So that's the biggest thing that takes me out of franchise modes, is whenever something just so stupid happens, either in free agency or in a draft. So hopefully that's been fixed.
Well, they say that they worked on the AI for that, so let's hope so. As for me, I just want to see EA make important changes, like adding in new studios to give the main studio sometimes actually work on things so each game doesn't feel like a beta. All right, with all that said and done, Taylor, what did you play last weekend?
I played a little bit of No Man's Sky. Like I said, I was gonna do. There's a lot of stuff to do, man. I found a little minor settlement. I took over said settlement, and I realized, oh crap, now I have to take care of it now. Damn it, No Man's Sky. So I've been building that up a little bit. It's been kind of fun to look at how much debt my settlement's in. I think I'm about $10 million in debt in my settlement, so that's great. Other than that, not really been playing much else. It's been a lot of fun, though, to get back to No Man's Sky and just doing my own thing. The biggest thing, I keep hearing people, whenever I'm on the game and they'll invite me to a party, like, oh man, you're playing No Man's Sky. I want to get back on it. I like the game. It's just, I don't know what to do on there. My thing is you just got to play it. Just play it to figure out what you do. Because we're not all going to do the same thing.
No Man's Sky had, I had to look it up because I was going to jokingly said that they had 20 major updates. But I'm looking at it and Sean Murray actually tweeted all the updates that No Man's Sky has had since their initial launch. It's had 19 major updates. So there, you're right.
Including one that was just announced today, I think. We didn't have it on there. It was a freighter. We didn't have it on the show notes, but it was like a freighter update that overhauled all that kind of stuff. So,
man, we keep saying on this show how No Man's Sky is like the biggest comeback in gaming history. And yeah, there is a lot to do in that game. And good luck to anybody who's interested now, who's just getting started, because you have a lot to do.
You got a lot to do, but it's not like you have to do any specific thing. Like, every time I get on the game, it's just a different goal for me. And I figure that out when I start playing. Like, for me, yesterday, my goal was to find a good ship. To find an S-class ship to buy. I had enough money. I was like, you know what? I'm going to do it. And then I realized I didn't have enough money. So my goal then became to get enough money. So whenever I get on it next, it won't be anytime soon, but it will be to get a better ship and to upgrade more stuff. And whenever I get on it the next time, it might be to do some more bounty contracts or to help out a friend who's getting into the game or something like that. So it just depends. You gotta just play the game, basically. Make it whatever you want out of it. And that's not like, oh, you make your own fun, like the beginning of Sea of Thieves and what you hear when a game doesn't have anything really to offer. It's just that the game has a lot to offer.
Ooh, well, I'm not getting to No Man's Sky anytime soon because actually couldn't get into it when I first tried it out.
Yeah, and then it felt like I took a shot in Sea of Thieves. I did enjoy Sea of Thieves at launch, even though it had its problems, and those were its problems. So it was the make-your-own-fun stuff that it really has also improved today. That's another comeback story.
As for me, over the past weekend, I've been playing Sentry Age of Ashes on my Twitch channel. It's a free-to-play dragon fighting game where you play as a rider, whether you're a Viking or whatever. And you and up to five other people will take the reins of a dragon rider as you go around battling out in the skies for supremacy. It's actually really fun. I can still use some work, but that's what I was doing over the weekend. And I've also been playing a little something called Bright Memory Infinite. I don't know if you remember Bright Memory, but it was the Chinese game made by one developer. And it was like it kind of like a cool tech demo for what the Unreal Engine could do for like a singular person. Then that dev went and made his own studio called FYQD Studios, and they got a publisher now. And Infinite is the quote unquote final version of the game that will be coming out on the Xbox Series X and PC and PlayStation 5. Actually, tomorrow, as the making of this podcast, so by the time this podcast episode goes out, everybody will be able to play it. So I played it, and since this podcast won't come out until that comes out, I guess I can do like a quick review on it. It is really short; you can actually finish it in less than 2 hours. And I am not too sure how I can write a whole review on a game that's like, hey, here's a cool little quick game for you to play in like an hour and a half if you have like. Nothing to do. It's a fun game, but man,
I would. There are podcasts out there that's like, you play a game for an hour or 2 hours, and then you talk about it. I don't know. I feel like you can probably get a review out. It'd be more difficult for sure.
Oh yeah, like we could definitely talk about it. Like, there's something we can do, like a light deep dive kind of discussion into. I can make a quick video out of it. But yeah, the game is like super short and the story is darn near nonsensical. But that's what I played last week. So Taylor, what are you working on and where can we find you?
Not working on too much. You can find me in the Discord. The link for that is in the description. Michael, where can people find you?
As for me, I am actually just going to work on the Bright Memory video and my streams this weekend. So you can find me on Twitch with twitch.tv/foxdaddy with the O being a zero. You can also find me on Twitter at @M_MOSLEY_JR. If you find a weirdo in a fox hoodie, congratulations, you are in the right place. And as always, you can find us on Discord, which is the best way to get in touch with us for now. We are still working on other ways to grow this community and make sure you can get to us more easily. But yes, Discord, come join our Discord, come chat with us, come make fun of us for being Cowboys and Dolphin fans. And also, please consider dropping us a rating. It helps us tremendously. And finally, check out thenursedash.com. We have a lot of guys on Stray and Multiverses right now, so be sure to check those out. If you love fighting games, you definitely want to check out the guy for Multiverses so you can get a head start on all of your opponents. Also,
on nursedash.com.
And we also apparently love Cats with Stray. And you can also find more gaming news on nursedash.com. And you can also find fun reviews, helpful reviews at that, other than helpful guides. So, Taylor, thank you for joining me in yet another episode of Power Up and Game that we felt was going to be a short episode, but wasn't. We seem to love doing that to ourselves.
We do. I thought it was a good one, though. It was an episode held up with two big topics that we made up.
That's true. We did have two main topics this time. And thanks to everyone for listening in, whether this is your first time or your 600th time. We truly appreciate you taking the time to listen to us talk nonsense. And we'll be back next week with more gaming news.